the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 480 for Wednesday, the 13th of January, 2016. We have come out of our slightly longer than intended winter break. I'm back from a vision quest, which I'll talk about in a second, and joining me is Dave Neal. Dave in the UK, me down in Australia. How's it going, Dave?
I'm really good. Welcome back.
We're actually recording this show over 2 days, technically, because it's Thursday morning for me and Wednesday night for you. So,
absolutely.
Motopod continuing to break ground.
The Motopod time machine back in full swing again.
Yeah, but it's been a long been a little bit. I wouldn't say a long while, but it's been a little bit. Unfortunately,
feels like it with the festive period and everything, doesn't it? And Happy New Year to everybody listening in. Hope you all had a good Christmas and a festive period and the holiday season.
Yes, certainly. Unfortunately, the off season was slightly more dead than usual. It's mostly been photos of riders skiing and not really much in terms of news or intrigue, which is why it's kind of taken us a couple of weeks to get this show together.
You don't want to just listen to us just having a general chat about racing. There needs to be some news thrown in as well. But it has been really quiet over the Christmas and New Year period. And as you say, it's been pictures of people training and you say skiing and holidays and everything else. So there's no point bringing you a show if there's no real news to bring. So now we've come out of the into the new year. And we have got a little bit of news to bring, and news seems to be breaking more and more as the days progress. It's nice for us to be back on the airwaves again, and nice to be back on the show with you, Harry.
Yep, certainly. As we get closer and closer to the Sepang test, more and more news will start to come out. Obviously, that first Sepang test is the 1st of February, so only about two weeks, more or less, from the recording.
Yeah, thereabouts, yeah.
So it'll be really into full swing. And then after the Sepang test, we get to do ridiculous things like predict who's going to win the season before the first race of the year. So that will be fun. And everyone be sure to look out for the MCN Fantasy League, which we will, of course, be running again once that is up and operational. And we're still undecided about whether we run the MCN not so good league, where you try and spend the most money and do the worst that you can. So if you have any thoughts or feelings about doing that league?
That's my season. That's my league every year. Spend your money and do the worst you can.
I don't know. Len gave you a pretty good run for your money for that title last year.
Len the wooden spoon Padilla.
Yes, exactly. I think Padilla is actually Spanish for wooden spoon, so that would explain that one. If you have any thoughts or feelings about doing our Wooden Spoon League, which is quite a good name for it, motopod@motopodcast.com, and you can obviously send any sort of feedback that you would like there. We got an email from Jesse Walters with a great little link to an onboard of the Macau GP, so I'll be sure to whack that in the show notes for anyone who's interested. Macau, sort of the last big racing event of 2015, now into 2016. As Dave said,
frightening to watch.
Yes, Macau is quite scary to watch.
Ladies and gents, even ladies listening as well as gents, if you can Chromecast or link that up to your TV, do it. It's a fantastic, fantastic piece of footage, as well as I don't know if we can find the link to it, Harry, before we to put in the show note to put in the footer before you post the show. The little exchange between Valentino Rossi and John McGuinness.
Yep, I can get that.
That footage of the opening lap of the Senior TT is also well worth watching. For the guys that haven't seen it or it hasn't been posted, the guys are on social media. Guys, you've got to watch this. He's so out of shape in the first 10 minutes. It's incredible.
Yep. And it was a slow off season when multiple bike racing websites are writing a whole article about how John McGuinness and Valentino Rossi talked on Twitter. So,
but they did. But it was also, I think we're into tweet of the year already from Valentino on that one, offering him the advice of a half a millimeter more preload on the rear.
Yeah. So be sure to check the show notes for a link to that little exchange and also that quite incredible video of John McGuinness, as Dave said. As we said, not much racing going on. The Supercross series in the US has started, but that's dirt bike racing, so we don't really talk about that. But luckily for
still
us...
Still like Fight Club. You can't talk. First rule of dirt bike racing is we don't talk about dirt bike racing. Although I am breaking my dirt bike virginity in the middle of February. I'm going to Sheffield Arena for the Arena Cross. the Monster Energy Arena Cross. So I'm looking forward to that. I've never been to a dirt meet before.
Mm-mm. So we'll soon have to sponsor Dave Neal Racing for the Arena Cross series. So everyone, be sure to get in those PayPal donations, and maybe you can get your sticker on the side of Dave's Kawasaki.
My KX250 or something. 450s now. They're horrible. I can't ride one of those. No. That's like big boys' bikes.
Someone who has been getting some new sponsorship in a seamless segue is Jorge Lorenzo. Obviously, last year he had one or two problems with HJC helmets. Then some Italian and Spanish websites reported that he had signed with Shark Helmets, which prompted Lorenzo and his media team to put out a tweet saying, no, everything is good with HJC. We intend to honour our final year of the contract in 2016 with them. But then, lo and behold, Jorge Lorenzo has signed with Shark Helmets.
the media game these days, it just gets more and more intense, doesn't it?
Yeah,
people releasing things, and the way with the social media side, with the access to the internet and everything else, and there's no secrets anymore, is there?
No, and it seems like most of this seems to happen to Jorge Lorenzo and his sponsors. It seems like, you know, every second day there's some article that Lorenzo's had a fallout with X sponsor, and then he denies it, but then a couple of months later, oh no, you know, they have left. So, yeah, hopefully Lorenzo doesn't have any more helmet problems, because, you know, sure, in Qatar he probably couldn't have won the race even if he had a good visor, and the same in the British GP that, you know, he probably wouldn't have been able to win, but, you know.
So no, but if he'd worn a breath guard or something, that might have helped at Silverstone.
Yeah, and the championship did get so close that, you know, just a couple more points from finishing in third instead of fourth would have been really helpful for him. And as Lynn Jarvis pointed out to Jorge Lorenzo in Qatar after his helmet issues, is you're one of the best riders in the world. You should have the best equipment. It's a bit of a joke that, you know, a helmet has cost you a podium position. So hopefully...
Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, you look at it. I mean, Shark are they're a great brand. They're one of the brands that you should be looking at, as well as Shoei Arai and AGV.
Mm.
So obviously he isn't... His own... ego won't let him use Arai, Shoei, or AGV. So Shark is the next best thing for him to use, and it is one of those respected helmet manufacturers. So at least now that should eradicate any of the problems that he would have had previously. And the irony of signing for Shark with all the shit that went down in the last four or five rounds of last season, the irony isn't lost on me either.
Yes, unfortunately, Jorge Lorenzo's press people didn't quite take the chance to, you know, play up to his championship shirt, which was the Jaws
poster.
He needed
me to write that press release, because I wouldn't have.
But, yeah, so, you know, if you're planning on buying a Jorge Lorenzo HJC replica, maybe wait a couple of months, because I think they're about to drop in price. Or if you're a fan of Shark helmets and a fan of Jorge Lorenzo, then you'll soon be able to get the red and white Porfuera on one. Pretty sharpish.
Yeah, and it looks good as well on the table. So they've done a good job on it. And so hopefully that's eradicated a couple of problems going into next year.
And then as one enters Shark, another leaves. Alicia Spargo, who has the same management as Jorge Lorenzo, interestingly enough. Alicia Spargo will now be wearing a KYT helmet instead of a Shark helmet. KYT had previously been worn by Andrea Iannone and Xavier Simeon. Neither of those guys seemed to have helmet problems. KYT is quite a popular brand in Indonesia and sort of that Southeastern Asian market. So probably a pretty good deal for Alicia Spargo. And
certainly.
Yeah, you know, it's helmet news.
It could be semi-lucrative as well when the MotoGP hits the pang and that part of the world. So there'll be little bits and pieces to do for him. So yeah, if it works, it works.
Yeah, exactly. In some more news that I just remembered but didn't write down on the show notes, the IOTA Racing team currently don't have a rider, a bike, or any sponsorship for the 2016 season. They had been down...
That's not helpful.
No, sort of need...
that's not conducive to going racing competitively.
Sort of need at least two out of the three. But yeah, Speedweek published an article saying that they're struggling a little bit. IOTA had been down on the provisional entry list with Alex De Angelis on an ART bike. But at the minute, it looks like they could be a bit of a question mark. They had a pretty rough start to the season in terms of finding sponsorship last year, and I think they missed the first Sepang test as well. So don't be too surprised if we don't see them out there, but maybe they can pull something together at the last minute. IOTA, as well as AGP Racing, are also having some problems in Moto2. As we talked about, I think we talked about it on the show, that Suter have fully pulled out of Moto2, and they want nothing more to do with it. Suter had been down to provide a frame for Efren Vazquez on the IOTA racing bike in Moto2, as well as Remy Gardner and Federico Fellini on the AGP team. But AGP have now withdrawn their entry onto the Moto2 grid, as they were hoping to get some financial support from Suter. So now Remy Gardner and Federico Fellini are without rides. It looks like Remy Gardner will go to the CEV Moto2 series and race on an FTR, probably with the Fritz Racing team, who Anthony West wildcarded with at Jerez, if anyone watched that race.
I'll see if we can get Wayne Gardner on the show in the next couple of weeks to fill us in on that. Yeah, well, see if we can fill us in on that and give us a heads up and see the whys and the wherefores and everything else. He's not shy of a word or two, so
no.
Hopefully I'll drop him an email and see if we can get him on the show in the next couple of weeks, so we can get it from the horse's mouth, so to speak. Speaking of Anthony West, there was an interview with him that came out, was it yesterday, day before?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it was about Tuesday, the 12th, more or less, for anyone who's listening in the future.
That he was asked about his plans for this season, and he did mention wild cards for Jerez and the CEV Moto2, but also not CEV, for Moto2 GP, my apologies, but also a BSB ride with BMW. Now we sort of spoke about between ourselves on this one, didn't we, and that there are only really two places that he could go. There's a new Prime Factors Racing team that's been announced for BSB, fronted by Northwest 200 winner, TT winner, ex-Supersport champion Steve Plater. He's fronting that team, and they are running BMWs. They haven't announced their riders as yet, so there's a potential that he could end up there. And also that Build-Based BMW, they've only announced friend of the show Lee Jackson so far, so there is another berth at Build-Based BMW as well. So at the moment, we don't know where he's going to land, but it seems that, according to the interview, that he will end up in BSB this year on a BMW.
Yep, and that was Anthony West saying that he has a ride for a BMW, so it wasn't any journalistic speculation. I think Anthony West.
No, it came from him. The quote was directly attributed to him in the interview. Yeah,
mm-hmm. And I think Anthony West would be a pretty big get for BSB. You know, it's another ex MotoGP rider who maybe didn't have all the success that he probably could have had, but you know, had to take one or two slightly sketchy deals. And obviously, Ant West, known for being a bit of a rain king, so in England that could be quite good. Although the last couple of seasons in BSB haven't been that wet.
No, we've had some good dry races for a change. I mean, he did appear last year for Qingdao MV a couple of times, but for whatever reason, that deal didn't really come off, and he departed the series to go back into world racing. So hopefully maybe Anthony West can get a full berth in BSB this year and be another string to the bow of British Superbikes. Mm. Speaking of British Superbikes, four-time British Superbike runner-up, former 500cc GP rider and World Superbike race winner Chris Walker is to make a shock switch to sidecar racing this season with the Santander Salt Kawasaki team.
Bit of an interesting one.
Massively interesting.
Definitely didn't see this one coming. You know, you don't really see too many top-tier or former top-tier riders switch to sidecar racing. Sidecar racing definitely seems to be sort of a world of its own, apart from your BSB, your World Superbike, and your MotoGP.
Yeah, it spent a little bit of time in the wilderness as well. Supported... They went off and supported Thundersport at some point, and then they did a little bit of European racing, supporting World Superbike. And now they have their own Eastern Airways British Sidecar Championship. So it's been a really big success under the guidance of Paul Napton. Last season was fantastic. They always get a decent run out. They get plenty of practice. They get a couple of races. It's great. It's good to see the sidecars back out there. Even as a kid growing up, I used to love watching the sidecars. I even at one point wanted to be a passenger in one. To be fair, I still do, but only as a taxi ride. I don't think I could actually do it on a race.
You look at some of these. You and Chris Walker on a team together.
I'm sure, mate. I'm all over that. I'm
sure
all over
we can
that.
Sort out some extra out. Sponsorship, you know, get a MotoPod sticker on the side of the bubble.
Perfect. Don't put it on me because I'll not be in it very often. But it's unusual because it's a completely different art to racing as a solo. Completely different. I mean, the guys who listen in the UK, they'll remember, maybe 20 years or so back, Darren Dixon, the Smith's Triumph, Jake Dixon last year, it's his dad, was British solo champion and then went on to be sidecar champion as well. Still the only man to be solo and sidecar champion in the UK to make that crossover. It's been a long time since anybody tried that. And we know Chris still wants to race. There was no competitive superbike race, superbike seats available for him this year after the B. Wiser Kawasaki team folded post Assen, I think. So unfortunately, there was no rides for Chris. The housewife's favourite, as Jim Witt and Jack Burnicle have christened him, still attracts a great crowd, still very, very popular with the British Superbike crowd, and he still wanted to race on. So if this is the outlet for him to carry on racing, who are we to argue? It's divided opinion in certain areas about how he can do that in a British championship where others have to go a different route. That's not for us to debate. I don't know the rules well enough to be able to put an opinion forward on that one. So, but you can, if you're in the UK and you see the Facebook pages, you can join in the debate there, but it's not for me to, I don't know. I don't know enough about it, but you know, live and let live, let him play. If he wants to play, then let him go. Fingers crossed, the guy will be a success. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting. And, you know, hopefully he can, you know, bring some more eyeballs to sidecar racing.
It's certainly going to elevate sidecar. It's going to increase more interest in sidecar racing without a shadow of a doubt. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Paul Knapp's going to be rubbing his hands gleefully on that one. Paul runs basically the sidecar championship, and he was the team manager of the B. Wiser ASOS team who won the championship last season. Knows his stuff inside out. And if anything, to bring that series more visible to the fans, because that's usually the one after the BSB races when everybody's queuing to get out of the circuit. So hopefully bringing Chris Walker in, it genuinely is. They go on like they, with the greatest respect to the sidecars, they do have, and this is just a genuine observation, not me pointing the finger, they do have a tendency to drop their guts all over the track at certain points.
It seems like any big race delay I've seen in BSB has usually been down to a sidecar
blow up. Yeah, exactly. And that's not pointing a finger. That's not, you know, say, being disrespectful to the sidecar guys. It happens. You know, they're stressed motors. They're a different breed. And a lot of the time, their races are last and their practices are last. Especially with tight TV schedules, race direction.
Which is sort of the same as the sidecar at the TT, is the sidecar's usually the one that suffers the most if practice has to get shortened or delayed.
That's right.
Yeah. I think it was at this year's TT that they, you know, they only got one practice session or something, and some people were upset about that.
Yeah, and they are in a lot of circumstances treated like second class citizens because of that. Not, you know, I'm not being disrespectful to them whatsoever. It just, they get that feeling, and I can understand why they get that feeling. But hopefully, having someone like Chris Walker along and bringing in the guys that were successful this year, it should elevate the standing of the series just that little bit more. I'm interested to see how it will go.
Yeah, I'm also interested to see how Chris Walker will go, because he's definitely no spring chicken anymore. He's getting on a bit.
Cheers, pal. He's only a year older than me.
Well, you know, he has one or two more World Superbike wins, so...
Anyway. He has one World Superbike win more than me.
Okay, one more win than you. I guess that's not so bad then, you know? You only have one World Superbike win.
How cool
win.
Does that sound? Yeah. But I also have the same amount of MotoGP wins as he does.
Exactly, even better, you know? It's like, I remember in university, whenever you met someone who went to Oxford Brookes, which isn't quite as good a university as Oxford, they'd always say, oh yeah, I go to Oxford, and then really quietly whisper, Brookes. So you can just do the same, you know? I have one less win than Chris Walker in World Superbike and the same number of MotoGP wins as Chris Walker. So, you know,
most 305 British Superbike starts or whatever he's done.
Yeah, then, you know, you just don't mention that you have 305 less British Superbike starts than he does.
No, that is true. I've followed his career since he was on the Pagets 250, going back to, what, 94? 94 possibly, 95 maybe, with Jamie Robinson and the rest of them. So it's, you know, it's nice to see the old boy still going round and he's still hungry to race. So who are we to deny him that opportunity?
Yeah, exactly. And he's taking a slightly different route. You know, a lot of these BSB races, when they start to get a bit long in the tooth or maybe can't find as a competitive ride, you know, most of them go to the TT or something.
Whereas I'm not digging like... your ageist tones today, Harry. Long in the tooth. What is he, 40? He's a year older than me. I think he's 44, coming up 45.
Sorry, I've been surrounded by young people in Australia, so, you know, all up on that. But anyway, yeah, as we said, you know, it's good to see that Chris Walker's still around racing and trying something new, and hopefully
he's still hungry for it. So, you know, there's still life in the old dog yet, so yeah, long may it continue.
Yes, and now on to the real meat of the show. We've had a fair few emails asking to clarify the technical rules for the 2016 season, and luckily Crash.net and Moto Matters, they both wrote excellent articles and really, really simplified the rules into a way that both Dave and myself can understand, which means that all of the Motopod fans will definitely be able to understand them. But luckily for everyone now, the rules are much simpler. You know, there's no more CRT, no more open class, no more semi-factory. There's one. There's the MotoGP class. Whoever wins that championship is the champion. There's no more open championship. You know, if you're the best satellite rider, then you're the best satellite rider, and that's an unofficial award.
Which is how it should be. It was always so confusing, and it just... everybody now out there, the guys and girls listening, you know, we know why they did it. We know why they tried to do it. It's sort of save the championship. You know, we don't want to go back to having 17 bikes on the grid because that's not so much of a spectacle, really. The 24, 26 bikes is so, it looks so much more healthy. And it's through the time, the economic bad times when we lost Kawasaki and then Suzuki took the sabbatical as well. It was costing manufacturers so much money to enter. And to run a full season through tough economic times that thankfully we're coming out the other side of. It's nice to see that the series is still healthy and that they are forever evolving the rules to bring things back to a level playing field.
Yep. So as we said, level playing field means the same spec ECU and software for everyone, which we've talked about a fair bit. That'll probably be the biggest change for 2016, more than the tyres. We said that it's all one championship. However, both Suzuki and Aprilia, and then KTM when they come, and any other new team, they still do get some concessions by not having a dry win since 2013 or not achieving 6 concession points in the last season. We'll get to what concession points are in a second. But the difference for Suzuki and Aprilia is that they will have 9 engines throughout the year instead of 7. They have no engine freeze, so they can continue to bring updates to their engine, and they also have unlimited private testing with both test riders and contracted riders, whereas Yamaha, Honda, and Ducati only have 5 days of private testing.
And I think that's the most important part of it, I think.
Mm.
The unlimited private tests.
Mm. Yeah, you know, we saw how much that helped Ducati throughout last year, having Michele Pirro go around and do lap after lap. And I think that this year, 2016, we'll see Ducati really benefit from that testing and Pirro having had so much time on those Michelin tyres.
Absolutely. And then if they pass that on to Iannone, then I think the front four becomes a front five. I think that's what we're heading towards for 2016.
Mm. Hopefully, yeah. I mean, you know, Ducati have definitely stepped it up, and now Ducati are in the same air quotes class as Yamaha and Honda. Ducati are in that class because they managed to achieve 6 podium credits last, or 6 concession points last year. Obviously, we spoke about at the start of the year, if Ducati got a dry win, then they'd lose, various soft tyres and liters of fuel, and then after Austin, they lost some fuel, yada, yada, yada. But they've simplified the rules a fair bit in that regard. So you get 3 concession points for a dry weather victory, 2 for a second place, and then 1 for a third place. So if Suzuki were to get 6 third places next year, which would be very good for Suzuki.
It would.
That would mean that in 2017, they would be on the same playing field as Honda and Yamaha. And then for the 2016 season, if they were to get, you know, those first 6 thirds in the first 6 races of the year, they would then lose their testing time and become limited to testing. If Suzuki or Aprilia reach 6 concession points during the season, they will no longer have unlimited testing. They will continue to have the 9 engines for the year, but then will then drop to 7 in 2017, as we said, and they will still be able to develop their engine. So really, it's the testing that gets cut short, which is quite a good compromise, I think. You know, they're still on the same amount of fuel and same tyres and same ECU, so, you know, no more great results in qualifying just because you have a soft tyre. And as Dave said, you know, I think the testing is really what gives the teams the edge and the advantage to try and catch up, because now, if Suzuki, as we said, were to get the 6 concession points, then they'd only really be able to do things like dyno tests back in Japan, and, you know, the advantages from that are not quite as big as having Alicia Spargo and Maverick Vinales do 600 laps of Sepang.
Over 18 races, if they can finish a third of them on the podium and they end up losing their concessions for 2017, that would be a hell of a result in such a short space of time. Yeah. For the smaller factory, in air quotes, of Suzuki.
Yeah, that would be really incredible. You know, I think that might be a bit ambitious for Suzuki. Is I don't think they'll quite be able to get 6 concession points, but, you know, you never know. You really never know. If there's a couple of funny races, then maybe. You know, Maverick Vinales is certainly looking strong, and I think he could be in podium contention for at least a couple, but.
It's a tough ask. It really is a tough ask, and you're going to need some unusual results from the standard top four.
Yeah.
To make that happen.
Yeah, and you know,
but, you know, if they can get half of those, it could be classed as a good season.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if Suzuki is able to finish in the top 5 at every race, I think that would still be a really good result. You know, look at how long it took Ducati to be able to finish second, and Ducati were starting from a much higher point than Suzuki were. Suzuki having been out of the series for so long. So,
yeah, Ducati have had a continuous appearance, haven't they? They've not taken a step out for the time that Suzuki did, and then come back with a relatively successful bike.
Yeah, exactly. And then what's also interesting about these new concession point rules is that if Honda, Yamaha, or Ducati fail to score a single concession point in the whole 2016 season, i.e. if they don't manage to get a podium at all, which would be quite unlikely, but you never know, maybe the Honda turns out to be a real dog or... I don't know, something like that. But if one of those, you know, big 3 teams doesn't manage to get on the podium at all, then they will get the same concessions that Suzuki and Aprilia currently have for the 2017 season. Maybe, as I said, maybe if Honda, you know, maybe if the Honda engine is even worse this year and riders can't make it more than the first corner, that then Honda would get these concessions for the next year. But can't quite see that happening.
No, I can't see that happening there, not at all. I can see potentially Marc Marquez struggling to get the best out of the Michelin's early doors.
Yeah.
And losing and dropping potential points there, but I don't know. I think they're going to come back and hit the ground running. That's not Honda's way. It's not HRC's way.
And even Marc Marquez at 80% on, you know, not a great bike, as we saw last year, he was still able to finish on the podium, or probably could have finished on the podium a lot more if he hadn't been trying to push a bit too hard, so...
You look at it's a hard one. I mean, as we've seen before, that with everybody on their game, and well, if anybody finishing the race, you don't see much outside of the top four occupying the top four places. I know that sounds a bit contrived, but you understand what I mean. That with Lorenzo, Rossi, Marquez, and Pedrosa, there isn't really anybody on the bikes to challenge those four outside of Iannone, who hopefully this coming year we'll be able to challenge on a more regular basis to that top four and show his hand a little bit more. Dovizioso possibly not. Even on, like you say, on an 80% bike on a factory machine, they are still going to have the ability to finish ahead of the Suzukis and the Aprilias and everything. They're not going to finish sort of mid top 10.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think we'll be seeing any concessions from Yamaha, Honda, or Ducati in 2017. No.
But they have to put those in just in case. There's got to be a plan B, hasn't there?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that this whole system of, you know, if a team does have a really rough year, like Ducati had, you know, back in the early 2010s, is it does sort of then give them that year immediately after where they can have those advantages to rebuild. And we don't have the issue where we had with Ducati where they just continually slip and slip and slip. Or like with Suzuki where they continue to slip and slip and slip due to a lack of funding. So I think it should hopefully keep teams a bit healthier and sort of mix it up a bit as opposed to, you know, having this huge gap we had between Yamaha, Honda and everyone else.
Yeah, it narrows that gap between the haves and the don't quite haves.
Mm.
And that's what we want to see. We want to see the field a lot closer. And this has the potential to bring the field a lot closer. Yes, you're still going to have two Yamahas and two Hondas at the front in any particular order that you wish, and potentially the odd Ducati thrown in. I don't see Aprilia, you know, struggling. You know, I don't see Aprilia taking on the top five or six. Suzuki, yes, with the riders that they have, especially as you say, Maverick Vinales. But it tried just to bring the field that little bit closer and not have the open bikes against the factory bikes and everything else. Just everybody, there you go. Your custom bikes, satellite bikes. Then you got the factory boys. There you go. Go and play and just bring things tighter together. Hopefully, yeah, this will help a large step towards that.
Yeah, and plus these rules are good for a casual fan. You know, you can say to a casual fan, everyone has 22 litres, everyone has access to the same tyres and has the same ECU. So you're no longer having to explain, well, Suzuki have soft tyres, Ducati have 22 litres of fuel, but they used to have 24. So it'll be much easier for most people because, you know, at the end of the day, is the unlimited testing going to be a huge difference? Probably not, but it will certainly help. But a casual fan who's, you know, just watching race day on MotoGP won't really need to know about that. So I think that
no, overall, but if it halves the gap between the Suzuki in seventh that used to be 8 seconds and it's now four, that's progression.
Yeah, for sure.
And also it takes away the difficulties of qualifying, as we said, without qualifying on the Ducati qualifying on a soft rear. They qualify on the same rear as everybody else.
Yeah, and I think that that's a big one because it did seem like the qualifying thing was quite a big sticking point with a lot of people last year that, you know, they were quite upset that, oh, the Ducatis are just slow at the start of the race because they get a good qualifying and yada, yada, yada. But, yep, everything more or less even for next year. So let it
as even as it can be with factory and non-factory teams.
Yeah, I mean, you know, no matter what you do, there's always going to be one team that has more money to put into R&D than the others.
Of course.
And, you know, there's Yamaha and Honda are always going to have that advantage in the foreseeable future of having so many years of experience at the top. You know, their base starting point is always going to be higher than that of Ducati, Suzuki and Aprilia.
Oh, of course. Yeah, no question at all. But if this is, you know, it gives other teams hope for progression. Mm. And obviously, and it, eventually that does filter down to the road bikes as well. So to that point, it really does help in every manufacturer to get them closer to the front. They're never going to be at the front, but if it gets them closer to the front, it makes the racing more exciting, it makes it more interesting, and even in its current state, it kicks Formula One into the weeds, and this will just help that even more.
Yes. David Emmett wrote an interesting article about Google search trends and stuff, and MotoGP peaked higher than F1 did this year for the first time in, you know, the last 10 years or something, which was quite interesting. The whole Sepang clash helped MotoGP's popularity a fair bit. So hopefully we see a fair few more people watching next year. But speaking of Sepang, the penalty points have also been clarified for the 2016 season. So with Valentino Rossi having gotten his 3 points from Sepang and his 1 point from Misano, people were worried that once it got past Misano in the 2016 season, that if Rossi were to then get another penalty point or another rider who's in a similar situation, if they were to get one more penalty point, they would then have to serve another back of the grid penalty.
Which is like being penalised twice for the same offence.
Yeah. I mean, having gotten that big chunk of 3 points, it does make it quite, you know, quite tricky. One penalty points get handed out sort of just a bit of a slap on the wrist. You know, obviously the Sepang clash may have divided opinions, but it, regardless of who did it or what, it was quite a dangerous racing incident. So that's why there was such a harsh penalty handed out. But, you know, as Rossi showed in Misano, it's quite easy to get given one penalty point just for, you know, not fully thinking and, you know, maybe being a bit in the way of another rider. So that's why that was worrying. But now it means that Rossi the next penalty Rossi will get is for 7 points for starting from pit lane. So Rossi now has to go up to 7 points, which means that if he passes Misano and then gets another penalty point at the next round for, I don't know, blocking someone in qualifying again, that nothing will happen, even though he is on 4 points, and that he would then need to get another 3 points to then start from pit lane. So as Dave said, it stops that penalty from being repeated.
Yeah, and it makes it, it's better for everybody. Everybody knows where they are, and as you say, especially when you have that overlap from Misano to Sepang, which is three races.
Yeah, I think so.
Aragon, Motegi, Phillip Island.
Yeah.
Anything can happen in those three races. So then obviously you do run the risk then of having another penalty from the back of the grid. So at least now there's an accumulation of points, which is better and a lot more clear for the riders and for the watching public and ourselves.
Yeah, and some people are a bit worried that, you know, oh, this means that a rider could therefore go back up to 6 penalty points and they won't get punished. But I think that if race direction notices that a rider is deliberately riding dangerously and then, you know, stopping once they get to 6 points, I'm sure that, you know, race direction would probably have a word with that rider or hand
I'm sure
out
nobody goes out looking for penalty points, do they? It's more for, like, you take your Danny Kent, exceeding track limits and things like that. If you do that on a regular basis, then you're going to get a penalty point or you're going to get dropped back or whatever. You know, there are certain whys and wherefores, but for as naughty points go, it doesn't happen too often.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there was a bit of a blip for Valentino, and you know that was something that was out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
And it, you know, more frustrating on the racing line. Yes, that deserved a penalty point. The Malaysia thing, okay, he got his punishment. It was what it was. But yeah, he can now do something, and it just makes it's a little more clear. It's always been a little bit misty as to whys and wherefores. Same with the concessions with the open class and everything else. It just makes everything a little more open, a little more crystal clear going forward into 2016. Evolution.
Yes, evolution, not revolution, in the words of Alan Partridge. But yeah, so that was thanks to crash.net for writing that handy little article. I'll include a link in the show notes to that article. They have a very, very nice little table which clearly displays the differences in, you know, concessions and engines between Yamaha, Honda, Ducati, and Suzuki and Aprilia. So if you want to go have a read of that, then be sure to check out the show notes. Moto Matters, as always, did a bit more of a detailed analysis, which I'm sure that everyone will be able to find on their own.
Certainly. And while you're on the Crash.net, while we're giving props to Crash.net, a superb interview with Hervé Poncharal on there.
Yes, definitely. Crash.net really, really turned themselves around from the days of just reporting crappy rumours and having a pretty bad forum section. I think that it's safe to say that Crash.net have sort of established themselves as a top news website now.
Very much so. Just don't read the comments section.
Yeah, no, that's...
On any... Ian Wheeler's a good one for that one. He tries to stop himself reading the comments section, but he can't help it, and then he just ends up spontaneously combusting from frustration.
Yeah,
I mean, really, if you want to wind yourself up, if you've got low blood pressure or something like that, go ahead, read the comments on Crash.net, because they'll be certain to raise the blood pressure on some of the articles.
Yeah, Crash.net or the MCN Facebook page, both of those are... lots of well-informed people, definitely. Lots of well-informed and balanced people expressing their views. You know, of course, anyone who comments on that from Motopod is probably some of the better comments, and not
no
the
question.
And not the ones, you know, shouting derogatory names at riders.
Although, when you look at our Facebook page, we don't have that. Our listeners are fantastic. They are balanced in their views.
Yes, definitely. Although I will say to the MCN Facebook crowd, some of those comments do think up quite inventive names for Cal Crutchlow. So sometimes those nicknames can be quite amusing. But speaking of our Facebook page, obviously the Motopod fan page on Facebook, people may have noticed that I posted a photo of my Christmas present, which was some season review DVDs.
Now, fantastic collection.
Yes, now, this comes back to what I said at the start of the show about a Vision Quest. So we go on a lot about the best season ever on this show. So now I have started the perhaps overambitious, overambitious project of trying to figure out what the best season ever is. So I have every season review for the 500cc/MotoGP World Championship from 1984 onwards.
So produced by Vision Quest?
Yes. So we're gonna call that the cutoff for the best season ever, because that's more or less the modern era, you know? I think going back any further than that, you start to get into weird things of, you know, they were only on the factory bike and yada, yada, yada. So my quest...
Just an ageist again, Harry.
Yeah, I am. So my quest, apart from oppressing the old people, is to basically watch 1984 to present day, watch all the season reviews, and then, you know, once I can, watch more or less every race on MotoGP.com to try and find the best season ever. So what I plan to do is that after I watch a season, I'll have a little report on MotoPod. I'll probably try and think up some catchy theme music for that, a bit of a section at the end of the show, talk about that, talk about the season, maybe give it a rating out of 10, and then, yeah, try and find the best season ever. I also have the Superbike, the World Superbike season reviews from 2002 onwards, so not only am I going to try and find the best season overall, but I'm going to try and find the best year overall since 2002 when MotoGP entered the four-stroke era. So,
do you know, I can hear people shouting at their generic MP3 devices and their speakers and everything else. You need to get out more.
So, I can't promise.
You realize this challenge that you've set yourself is just man, when are you going to have it done by? This year or next?
Probably next year. That was what I was about to come on to, is that I can't
promise. It's off-season discussions. That's what you're building up already. Talk about forward planning. This is the off-season news, and this is the off-season shows for MotoPod from November to, this time next year.
Yeah, exactly. So I can't promise that one of these will happen every week, because, you know, lots of these DVDs are four or 5 hours, and, you know, sometimes I'm unfortunately going to be too busy to do that, but I will try and, you know, I'll try and do at least one a week. So if I don't, then motopod@motopodcast.com, and just send a lot of angry emails. But yeah, that's my vision quest, is to try and find what truly is the best season ever.
I did almost wear out my copy of The Wizard of Oz, the 1987 500cc GP review.
I'll be sure to put an asterisk to that.
Recite that word for word at one point. It was the only season review I had.
Well, you can feel free to borrow one or two.
I can still see Rob Mack going down in the dust at Goiânia.
So, that's what I'm going to be doing for the next year. Probably won't see too much sunshine doing this. But if you have any ideas of what you out there in Motopod land think is the best season ever, motopod@motopodcast.com. And I'll try and, you know, keep a tally of those votes to see where they fall. We've already had one or two comments on the photo I posted to the MotoPod Facebook page. So be sure to go check that out.
And, there are no real criteria for this. It's just what the listeners feel is their favorite, is the best year for them.
Yeah, I mean, this is all super subjective, right? Objective. So
there's no definitive answer, is there?
No,
it's
definitely
like who's
not.
It's like who's the greatest rider of all time. Yeah. You know, that's always, we're not going to go down that road.
Yeah,
not now.
Definitely not.
Save that for next year.
There's a huge number of ways to approach it. But yeah, hopefully by 2018, we'll have an answer to this. my knowledge from like 2012 onwards is pretty good. So I don't think I'll have to watch those season reviews. But it's going to take a while. But hopefully it brings MotoPod some entertainment.
You really have set yourself up a kipper on this one, haven't you?
Yeah, and now that I've said it on the internet, I'm sure that I will get a...
You have the option to edit this out before the show goes live. You have that option.
We're doing this. I'm dedicated to answering the hardest question in motorsport. What is the best season ever? Right now, 2006... is a bit of a front runner. Obviously, you know, great championship battle in MotoGP, and the 2006 Superbike season was pretty stunning. You know, you had Bayless, Toesland, Corsa as reigning champion, Kageyama also up there on the Suzuki. Obviously, you had Haga on the Yamaha. So far, 2006 is a front runner for that best season ever. But, you know, with every year back to 1984 of Grand Prix, and then onwards from 2002 in World Superbike, it's going to be a long time.
If you're going GPs from 84, why not go from World Superbike from 89?
Because Duke did not have those season review DVDs available.
Good answer.
So if someone has a way,
so any Fred Merkel fans out there, I'm sorry, we can't do that,
unfortunately. But if someone has access to those season reviews, then send me an email via the Motopod email address, and maybe we can talk about continuing to send my life down this dark, dark, spiraling hole of research.
And was that the first British World Superbike race? Donington Park?
Wow, history. Motopod, the historic podcast. We have the person at the first ever British Round of the World Superbikes, and we have the world's biggest idiot in me trying to...
I was
going to
say, I'll take that crown as well, I don't mind.
trying to decipher this pickle. So, yeah, thank you to the fine folks at Duke for producing these DVDs. I had to buy, or my parents had to buy all of these DVDs for me as a Christmas present, so it's not like we're getting sponsored by Duke. But, no. If Duke wants to send us free stuff, then motopod@motopodcast.com.
GT reviews, season reviews, anything, that's fine. We'll give you a shout out on the show, guys. Thank you very much.
But yeah, that was my last bit of news. And I eagerly await everyone's emails telling me how wrong I am about the 1986 season.
And how much you need the love of a good woman.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, who needs a significant other when you have over 200 hours of classic motorcycle racing?
You don't. There is nothing. Nothing else should get in the way of that. Nothing at all.
So yeah.
I'm joining you on that current form, so maybe I should start looking at some of those as well.
So yeah, my holiday in Australia has been quite eventful. Obviously, started this Vision Quest, and we've now finally brought you this show. By the time you people out there in Motopod land are listening to this, I'll probably be on a metal tube flying back to Barcelona, so well, we can get back to the regular shows. As we said, you know, season starting to wind up. First Sepang test, February 1st. Suzuki will have a new bike. Aprilia will have a new bike. We'll have hopefully the new Ducati. Casey Stoner will be at Sepang a couple of days early, testing the GPX, which is the code name for the new Ducati. Then both Yamaha and Honda are having a private test before then, I've been informed. And there'll also be one or two private Michelin tests, but don't really expect much coverage from those because obviously they're private tests. So they like to keep things pretty close to the chest.
Yes, they do. It's still too early yet for everything else. And as I say, Sepang's not too far away, so we'll have reports and the build-up to that coming up. Finally, from me, last week I gained a year in age. Thanks to all the guys that wish me happy birthday over Facebook, the listeners to the show. It means a lot. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. And just a general shout. This one, we've been in contact a lot through the show. I know you have as well, Harry. Down in Tasmania, Peter Baines. One of our emeritus listeners. Peter's not been very well recently. He's on the mend as best he can. We just want to wish you all the best, Peter, and enjoy the 68.3% proof whiskey.
Yeah, I saw from that. That seems like that should probably be illegal.
From the Helliers Road distillery that he brought home with him, self-bottled and sealed. 68, that's like paint stripper. I can smell that and be on my ass. But no, really, we've been in touch quite a bit. He's a great fella, and please continue getting well. All right.
Yeah, and that goes not only from Dave, but all of Motopod. And once again, if you want to join in any discussions or have any questions, comments, concerns, or criticisms, motopod@motopodcast.com for all your emails. And yeah, let the best, hopefully not the best season ever, because it'll take me quite a while to get to 2016. Hopefully we can.
I know this is the best season. This will be the best season ever.
Yeah, so maybe this Vision Quest will never end, but it's good to be back. Happy 2016, really, everyone, and can't wait for the racing. We'll catch you soon.
We're ever closer, and every day takes us just that step closer. All the best. We'll catch you again soon. Bye-bye.